Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents His Blue Stocking Bride, a Regency Romance, by Sally Britton, narrated by Rachel Beresford. Chapter 1. Ellen flicked a black curl from her forehead, but the irksome spiral just bounced back. Her irritation mounted, and she wished her mother's maid had not thought to give the matron and her daughter the same curls.
"Ellen, try this."
Teresa, the eldest sister in the Bringhurst family, pulled a hairpin from beneath her bonnet and held it across the tea-things to Ellen.
"And for heaven's sake, please tell Mrs. Rowlings to try something else with your hair. It isn't as thick as Mama's for all those curls to be practical."
What flattered her 60-year-old mother did not do Ellen any favours. Teresa resumed weaving tiny stitches into the little cap she held and turned back to the conversation with their mother.
"What of Dorothea, Mama? Have you any news from her?"
"Not this past week." Mrs. Bringhurst leaned forward, prompting her two present daughters to do the same, though she hinted she would send for me soon. Teresa tusked and shook her head.
"The first confinement is dreadful. She will be glad of your company before the baby arrives."
"I miss Margaret today," Ellen said. "It is a shame she did not feel well." Margaret, born after Teresa and before Ellen, had announced her own impending increase and remained home from the weekly meeting of mother and daughters. As the only sister unmarried and uninitiated in the ways of motherhood, Ellen had little else to say on the matter, for all she loved her nieces and nephews. "Although I likely know more than any woman without children ought to know about child-rearing." Ellen bit the insides of her cheek to keep from smiling. "The house will soon be full of grandchildren," Mama said, her eyes aglow. Ellen nodded, thinking of her nieces and nephews playing in the gardens the previous summer. "And the miracle of children is that each one brings more love with them. We are a fortunate family." Sometimes when she thought such things, Ellen's stomach felt oddly hollow, as though she was missing something important.
"We shall keep you busy, travelling from one house to another to look after grandchildren. However will you manage, Mama?"
Teresa asked, her manner teasing.
"Quite well, I should think. Ellen is here to look after the house, and there is not much else to keep me occupied."
"There will be no trips to Bath this year," Ellen added,
more cheer in her tone than necessary. If they had gone to Bath again, the distance from mother to expectant daughters would be the work of several days' journey. It had been the right decision to stay at home. "And I have no desire to go and pretend a woman of nearly 26 years can compete in the marriage mart." Ellen kept that thought private, but wondered if any of her family considered the same thing.
"No, I admit I will miss the society of a few friends. It will be much better to be nearby when you girls need me," her mother added.
"I do worry that Dorothea is farther away," said Teresa, her brows knitting in concern.
"Pshaw, she is 5 hours from here when I take the carriage, with the roads in good condition. That is but a morning's work of it."
Mama adjusted the sewing in her lap, the white lace of a christening gown trailing down her skirt.
"And I will be with her for at least a week prior to her time."
"I think it's lovely we all managed to settle nearby."
Teresa looked as unruffled as ever, her hair done up in an elegant twist beneath her bonnet, and her gown the colour of fresh peaches. Motherhood suited her.
"We are ever as much in each other's company as we were before."
"Indeed, I have not had to give up any of you."
Their mamma looked happily between the sisters, and both offered smiles in return. Ellen's felt strained, but she blamed her unease to fatigue from reading late the night before. Ellen cut her thread and held up the handkerchief she'd been working on.
"There, finished." "Lovely, dear," her mother said. Your sister will like that gift very much."
Ellen relaxed under the praise, and the conversation continued while she put her things away in the sewing box. Looking to the window, Ellen took in the beautiful landscape, which remained familiar and soothing, wrapped in its golden shawl of autumn leaves. But a tiny thought intruded upon her contentment. Though she loved the sight of the rolling hills, framed by the oak trees of her father's property, sometimes she longed to view a different horizon, one that belonged just to her. Ellen shook herself from those thoughts and set about tidying the tea tray. The very first time she held her eldest nephew, Teresa's firstborn, she declared to the family that nothing in life was as precious as that little bundle. The preceding infants were passed into her arms as well, and each she declared to be perfect and of infinite worth. But she had always thought that some day there would be an infant of her own to hold and keep in her arms. While 26 was not too old to wed and be a mother, she had given up on that hope. No man had ever caught her interest in that way, at least no man she might actually have a chance with. The one man she had dreamed of, had dared to place in her imaginary world of husband and home, had never spent a single season in Bath. Ellen swiftly closed the door on that thought. The butler entered with a silver tray.
"The afternoon post, madam."
"Lovely." Mama held her hand out to accept a letter.
"Oh, it is in Dorothea's hand."
Teresa gasped and laid her things aside, attentive eyes on their mother. Ellen sat back on the sofa and folded her hands in her lap. Mama read hastily, but silently. Before they could ask what news the letter held, she stood and began waving the sheet of paper like a sailor's signal flag.
"I've delightful news. Your sister has sent for me at last."
Her excitement made her cheeks bright, and she rushed from the room at a pace that was as near to a run as Ellen had ever seen her come. Teresa grinned at Ellen, her joy for their youngest sister readily apparent.
"She must have gone to father," Ellen said. "Go with her, Ellen. There may be more to the letter."
Teresa made a shooing motion with her hands,
"and heaven knows I cannot run down the hall after her."
Ellen recovered from her surprise and followed their mother. Down the steps to the ground floor, she made it to the hall in time to see Mama burst into the study. Ellen tried to follow at a more sedate pace.
"Stephen,"
Mama said excitedly, her voice filling the room.
"Dorothea has sent word. She has need of me. I must leave first thing in the morning."
She handed Papa the letter, which he read with more deliberateness than his wife had.
"We may only lack a few weeks until our new grandchild comes."
Reginald, the youngest of the family and the lone son, was sitting in a chair across from his father at the desk, watching with amusement.
"Congratulations must be sent. What can I do to help you, Mama?" he asked solicitously.
Their father answered,
"Send word to the stables. Your mother will want to leave early. Tell cook to prepare a hamper."
Reginald stood and bowed to his parents before leaving the room.
"Isn't this wonderful? My youngest daughter, a mother."
Mama clapped her hands, beaming at Papa.
"What a glorious thing."
"So it is, darling."
Papa stood and came round his desk to embrace her. As they parted, sharing a familiar, tender look, Ellen felt her heart constrict. She took a step back, recognizing their moment as one private between husband and wife. Ellen quietly left the room, but stopped at the staircase and sank down on the bottom step. The silence of the empty hall gave her room to collect herself. Ellen had given up on a marriage and family of her own after 5 seasons. When she had her come out at last, she was already older than most debutantes. Her mother had wanted to wait until Margaret married, but at last gave in and allowed Ellen out in society as well. Then, Part way into Ellen's season, the family was in raptures over Teresa's first babe and left Bath in a hurry to meet the newborn. As the seasons came and went, her elder sisters married, had babies, and her younger sister was brought out. And Ellen remained the sole Miss Bringhurst. She shook her head, trying to dispel the thought. It made her feel grey more often than not, and she knew she ought to put those feelings aside and be content. She did not need to be morose just because she was a spinster. That dreaded word had never crossed her lips, but at 26 years old, without prospects, Ellen accepted the designation society would bestow on her for the rest of her life. Plenty of families had a spinster or two lying about. Ellen knew this. Spinsters were useful sorts, called upon to help their family members as the need arose. She could assist in nursing the ill members of a household, serve as a chaperone to her nieces one day in the future, or provide companionship for a sister, whatever they required, for the rest of her days. Her mother emerged from the library and Ellen rose.
"Can I do anything to help, Mama?"
"Not at present," her mother said cheerfully. "Teresa will be taking her leave soon. I must let her read the letter." Ellen nodded, but did not follow her mother back up the stairs. Instead, she retired to the library adjoining her father's study. This room was dearer to her than any other in the house, as it always felt warm and inviting. She liked the dark oak panelling and rich red curtains, finding they made her feel safe and warm, and she needed that comfort. She returned to the volume of Sir Richard Harris's study of Roman civic improvements and settled in her favourite chair. The fire in the hearth kept away the chill November air. Ellen had made her way through a single page of the volume when the door to her father's study opened. Her brother Reginald came striding out. Reginald paused upon seeing her.
"Ellen, what book is your nose stuck into today?"
He spoke in a playful manner.
"That tome is far too dangerous. It looks large enough to swallow you."
She raised her eyebrows and gave him a wide-eyed stare. "Perhaps it will, and then you shall have to search its pages to find me again."
"Not I,"
he insisted with a laugh, resuming his walk to the shelves.
"Father sent me for a ledger. We are studying the effects of the weather on crop production."
"I was reading in an almanac that temperatures have been disturbingly cool of late." She rose from her seat to locate the book her brother needed, several shelves away from where he'd been looking. "It is disturbing by all accounts." Reginald made a sound of agreement, taking the thick ledger from her.
"It cannot last forever."
"But I also read of a Russian explorer who found evidence of crops completely frozen and preserved in an ice field. I wonder if—" He cut off her remark with a chuckle, shaking his head at her.
"Ellen, I've no use for Russian ice fields."
He gave her a pitying smile and went back to the study. "Of course not," she murmured as the door shut behind him. Never mind that she found the topic interesting. At 19, even Reginald knew his interests took precedence over hers. Ellen picked up her book and left the library, deciding she would rather read in her room where she might be undisturbed. She'd gone a few steps into the hall when the study door opened and her father stepped out.
"Ah, Ellen,"
he said, catching sight of her.
"A letter for you. It was mixed in with my post. After the uproar your sister's note caused, I quite forgot about it."
Ellen blinked at him in momentary confusion, then a burst of delight filled her as she took the folded paper from him and kissed his cheek. "Thank you, Father." She hurried to her room to read in private. She hardly ever received post, and this letter came from her favourite cousin's wife, a friend in her own right, Lady Marianne Falcombe.
"Dear Ellen, Colin and I have been thinking a great deal about you of late. We have heard through the family that your home is busy with comings and goings, as your sisters prepare to enlarge their nurseries. I cannot help but think it would do you a great deal of good to come visiting before winter sets in. Colin and I enjoy your company immensely and miss having you visit this summer. Please come visit for a fortnight." Ellen read the rest of the note rapidly, her heart rising at this unexpected invitation. She left her room, looking for her mother, and found her chambers. She was directing her maid in packing a trunk. "Mamma," Ellen said, loudly enough to gain her mother's attention, "I've had a letter."
"Yes, dear?"
Mamma looked over her shoulder, her manner distracted.
"What is it?"
"It is a letter from Marianne."
"Lovely, darling."
Her mother pulled a dress from the wardrobe and held it out to her maid.
"Rowlings, I think this would be better than the blue. We aren't going to be hosting any dinner parties after all."
"Yes, ma'am." Ellen stood in the doorway a few moments more, but her mother did not turn around again. "She's preoccupied. Leaving tomorrow, of course she's going to be busy," Ellen told herself, and went back downstairs. She tapped gently on the door of Papa's study before letting herself in. Reginald was examining the ledgers on the desk, but her father looked up when she entered.
"Ah, Ellen."
He held his hand out to her, inviting her in.
"Has your post added to the happiness of the day?"
He nodded to the letter in her grasp. Ellen took her father's hand, allowing him to draw her near. Though estate business and training his heir took much of his time, Papa gave her attention and her opinion greater voice than anyone else in the family. "I do have a little news." She held up the missive and he took it, raising his grey eyebrows. "Marianne invites me to stay with her and Colin in Hampshire."
"Indeed."
Her father unfolded the letter and began to peruse it with narrowed eyes. Ellen couldn't contain her question, her earlier desire to travel returning with force. "May I go? Mother will be with Dorothea. I don't think anyone here will miss my company." Papa nodded, looking up from the letter at last.
"Send your reply. You may be on your way after the coach returns from taking your mother to Dorothea."
Ellen gave her father a grateful hug. "Thank you, Papa. I will write at once." She fairly skipped out of the room. At last, something special meant for her. Wasting no time, Ellen went to her room to decide what she would take with her. Cousin Colin and Marianne were dear friends to her. Marianne and Ellen grew up playing at the Falcombe home, though a gap of 3 years separated them in age. Marianne's family sent her there a few weeks every summer. Marianne, when she grew old enough, debuted in London and had set her cap for one man, her former playmate Colin. Ellen had been happy for her friend when they married. Marcus had come to the wedding too, looking more handsome than ever before. Forbidding herself to dwell on that thought, Ellen pulled her travelling trunk from beneath her bed, noting its worn handles with a smile. She'd had the same piece of luggage since childhood and never thought on replacing it. It held too many lovely memories. Being a girl meant Ellen was not always a desirable playmate for Colin, but she would do when he had no other children about. Most often, his freckled, red-headed friend from school, Marcus Calvert, fulfilled the role as his companion. Ellen came to regard them both with reverent awe, following them about and trying to take part in their games. When they were feeling generous, they would put her up into a tree or attic room, and she could be a distressed Maid Marian or young Queen Elizabeth, needing a robber or a knight to save her. Thankfully, they let her take a book with her to pass the time until her rescue could be arranged. Ellen went to her wardrobe. She looked from one side of the closet to the other, noting her prettiest dresses were from her last season in Bath, when her hopes of meeting a handsome man to wed finally faded to nothing. None of the men she met matched the picture in her heart, where she carried an image of a gentleman with coppery curls and a charming grin. But Marcus, the second son of an earl,
spent every season in London. They never crossed paths socially, only at the home of her cousin for a month each summer, until the year she came out. It would be good to see her cousin and his wife. Being among friends who cared for her would go a long way to lift the melancholy that had begun to creep into her heart. Chapter 2. Marcus Culvert, second son to the late Earl of Annesbury, could not have received his invitation to stay at Falcombe Hall at a more opportune moment. Fleeing London and his meddlesome mother before the start of the season felt much like he imagined escaping prison would. Lord Colin Falcombe had sent for him immediately after receiving Marcus's shocking news. Since the two had been friends for nearly 2 decades, Marcus answered the invitation at once. Marcus had been ordered to marry by the Dowager Countess, his own mother, or forfeit his inheritance until her death. Given her good health and the fact that he loved her dearly, the edict did not come with any hope of a swift conclusion.
"You must marry,"
she had stated in their London town home, seated in her favourite chair. Her little dog yipped in her lap.
"Until you do, I will not allow you to have Orchard Hill."
Her dark red curls were twisted upward and tucked into a lace cap. He'd inherited both the curls and the hair colour from his mother, and counted neither a blessing.
"But, mother," he had said with a laugh, "I'm not yet 30. There is no rush to marry, and I know you no longer wish to run the estate."
The estate they spoke of came with her into marriage, and had always been intended for a second son, since the eldest would inherit the title and lands of his father. Marcus expected Orchard Hill to come to him when he reached his majority, but his mother withheld it, stating he had yet to mature enough to take over management of the property. She sniffed and tilted her head up in a most determined manner.
"I know precisely how old you are, just as I know that your brother is past 30.
"Lucas is the Earl," he pointed out. "He already inherited his title and property. What has age and marriage to do with estate management?"
"Absolutely nothing," she admitted without blinking. "But if I could hold your brother's feet to the fire and make him wed, I would. To my sorrow, I've no power over him."
"He's already married once."
Her tone softened.
"I know, and his loss of Abigail was heartbreaking. But that was 5 years ago. He must move on and marry. He must find his happiness. I have spoken to him, but he has yet to listen. Therefore, I have turned my attention to the son I am most able to manage. You cannot be alone forever, Marcus."
Had anyone other than his mother said such a thing, Marcus would have bristled up at once. As it was, he was merely annoyed. But she knew him, and she knew what he had gone through. His loss may not have been as devastating as his brother's, but it was nearly as life-changing.
"What makes you think I will bow to your wishes, mother?"
He dropped into the chair across from her and slumped down in it, feeling a headache coming on. He resisted the urge to push his hands through his hair, trying not to show his frustration.
"You want Orchard Hill. You have always wanted it."
She waved a hand dismissively before returning it to pet her dog.
"You trained under your father. You have shown an admirable interest in being a good landowner, but you have not married to provide a progeny. You have not looked for a lady to help you manage the estate. I will not let it pass into your hands until you have taken that important step. Until then, you will live on nothing more than the allowance your father provided you in his will."
Marcus sat straighter and regarded her warily.
"Father provided a mere pittance. He knew I would have Orchard Hill not long after he passed. That was 2 years ago."
She shrugged in a manner more suited to a Frenchwoman than an English countess.
"Then you will live on that pittance until you marry, because my coffers are closed to you."
Though her terms were harsh, her tone remained soft and gentle.
I love you dearly, Marcus. I have great hopes for you. But you have done nothing, absolutely nothing, to find happiness for yourself. Since before your father passed, you have moved about society, had flirtations aplenty, but not taken the matter seriously.
She put her dog on the floor and stood, brushing off her voluminous skirts.
I wish for grandchildren. That is the selfish point of these stipulations. But I also wish for your joy, which I do not believe you can find alone. I would like you to marry before your 30th birthday, at which point I will turn Orchard Hill over to you the moment the vows are said. If you do not marry, then we will revisit the situation.
Days later, comfortably situated in his brother's carriage as it neared the Falcon property, Marcus still did not understand her. The estate sat nearly stagnant, entirely dependent on his mother's old steward to make decisions on the management of the property. He knew she had not visited the estate since his father's death. Why would she entertain an absurd notion of forcing him to wed instead of handing him the deed? The very idea was something out of one of those gothic romances society debutantes like to read. He had no wish to put his heart at risk again, which would necessitate a marriage of convenience. A carriage came to a stop, jolting him from his thoughts, and the door was swung open by a footman. He released a long, slow breath to calm himself and left the carriage. The gloomy grey of the sky did little to brighten his mood. But when he saw Colin upon the steps of his home, and Marianne tucked into his side, he could not help but smile.
"Marcus, welcome."
Colin did not bound down the steps to greet him, as he did at the start of their boyhood's summer visits. He waited, standing straight and tall, his arm around his wife.
"Come in, before the sky bursts open and soaks us all."
Marcus took the steps quickly and clasped his friend's hand warmly.
"Colin, it's good of you to have me."
His friend, taller than he by a hand, looked unchanged since their last meeting. He still had straight, black hair, born longer than considered fashionable, and his clothes were more suitable to riding about the countryside than sitting at home and hearth. Colin's expression twisted into mock disgust.
"I invite you? Never did such a thing. Marianne insisted you come, otherwise I would not have had you here. My wife seems oddly fond of you. Can't say that I see why."
Marianne laughed and stepped forward with her hand raised for Marcus to bow over it.
"Don't listen to him, Marcus. We are both very glad you've come."
Her fair colouring was a contrast to his friend's looks, in the most complimentary of ways.
"Especially after we received your letter," Colin added, expression more serious. "Come in and clean up. We have refreshment for you, when you are ready."
Marcus thanked them both and went to his room without further delay. After his valet, Cray, saw to it that his person and clothing were made respectable, he took himself off to the parlour, where his hosts waited with a tea tray and sandwiches. After all three had partaken of the light repast, Colin settled back on the couch, arm around his wife, and dove into the thing most plaguing Marcus's mind.
"So, you must find a wife."
Marcus finished the last of his tea and returned the cup to the table at his side.
"According to my mother, I must find a wife, or else."
A frown appeared on Marianne's face, her bright eyes studying him intently.
"Does this distress you, Marcus?"
Of course it did, but he was trying to keep that from showing. He offered her a confident grin.
"Not entirely. A man usually gets to determine when and how he takes a bride, but I have been left with the ability to choose whom. The other factors are predetermined. I must marry before my 30th birthday. The sooner the better, actually. How I do it seems to matter little, as long as it is quickly."
"You poor dear."
Marianne looked up at her husband.
"Although the problem presented is straightforward enough."
"What do you intend to do? Colin asked.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?